Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. We are talking to Jonathan Goldman, one of the pioneers in sound healing, and he's just written a new book called The Divine Name, which is the name of God. Basically, you've discovered the true name of the Creator. Is that fair to say? I mean, when you say God...
Yes. It sounds fairly heavy, doesn't it?
Well, what do you mean by God? And I know, and basically, you're referring to the Hebrew God in a sense, but
well, in a level, Alan, what I believe I have discovered is a many thousand year old name of the divine, actually what could be considered the personal name of the Creator being, and the way that I discovered this was in a manner that a lot of really important discoveries are made, and that is actually through, you know, dream time and through the intuitional. But it first, if you like, manifested as a series of vowel sounds. Believe it or not, vowel sounds that resonate with the chakras. Are you familiar with the concept of the chakras?
Yeah. I mean, this audience is very advanced, so we don't have to start at the beginning. I think if they're listening, they all know what the chakras are.
So this name, when I sounded it after waking up from dream time, basically mm-hmm. It was a sound that went from the top of my head, from the crown to the root, and then back up to the top of the head, the crown. And that alone was really amazing, but I've been working with vowels I've been in this field of using sound for healing for about 30 years. So I wasn't that surprised when I made this sound and I had that experience. But what I was really amazed about was the fact that what the sound created was, if you like, a vocalization of this ancient name of the Creator being that is found in the Old Testament and is actually, which of course is the basis of all the Abrahamic traditions, the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And I was floored, and at first I thought, my goodness gracious, I've discovered something really, really important and really, really powerful.
How do you think you could have discovered that in 3,500 years no one else had that true connection? I mean, or maybe they have? Or kept it secret?
I can't tell you why. I can't. Perhaps it has been known by other people, and now it is only being brought out. I don't really have an explanation for why it should have manifested to me. That's not something that I actually cover in the book. I tell a story of how it happened and all these other things, but I don't, in the divine name, speculate that I am anyone special or anything like that. So, you know, it's a great question. I don't have an answer as to why me, but apparently it was meant to happen since it was a name that, and a sound, really, a sound that came to me, and I experienced, and then, you know, we were talking about the fact that it is, it's composed of what is called the Tetragrammaton, or the four-letter name of God, which is actually a Greek term. And in Hebrew, it's a consonant language. There aren't any vowels. So I thought that when I first made this sound, that it was just a coincidence that it should happen to sound like the name of the Creator being. And Alan, once again, I've been in this field for 30 years, and for 15 of those years, I was at first teaching people how to use a resonance, a vibration of using the vowel sounds to resonate the chakras, going from the root chakra at the base of the spine to the crown at the top of the head, using seven vowel sounds. And this actually system that I have been, that I worked with, has become so universal that I find it in all sorts of different books, etc. And it actually came from me. And don't ask me why I was the one to actually bring the system out either, but it did come to me, and it seems to have become universally accepted. But I would be going, if you like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, making the vowel sounds in that order. And when I was when I awakened from this dream, this inner voice said, "We want you to do the vowel sounds starting at the crown, going 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7." And Alan, I guess I'd been so indoctrinated that I literally couldn't do it in that manner, and I had to write down what the vowels were, and then I toned them. I made the sound. And then after I made the sound, as I told you, I experienced this energy going from the top of my head down to the root and back up again, but also I heard this extraordinary sound of the creator being. But, you know, how could that possibly be? Because really, the Tetragrammaton, the name of this divine being, is composed of consonants. So I just let it be. And then about 4 or 5 years later, I was actually reading a book on biblical Hebrew. And it talked about the fact that there were, in biblical Hebrew, three letters that were actually vowel sounds. The Yud, the He, and the Vav. And that when I sounded them in the manner that they were given in the book, it was the same sound. Now you say, well, okay, so that means really that it's been there in plain sight all the time, yes?
I guess, I mean, just so people know, the Tetragrammaton is the Yud, He, Vav, He in Hebrew, and some translations of that have called it Yahweh or Yahweh or Yehovah.
Right.
And and I was just in Israel, and they only call it Hashem, which means the name.
The name, you know? That's right.
The name that cannot be named, sort of like the Tao that can be said is not the true Tao, but you're saying there is a name of God that can be said, and when we do say it, we are activated and energized throughout our whole being. And
well, Alan,
maybe
let me take it one step further and say, no, I don't think it can be said. I think it must be intoned, that it must actually be sung, be sounded as a vocalized series of vowel sounds. And at this point, I'm really guided to play a brief recording of what this sounds like, because if I were to do it over the air right now, it would cause all sorts of distortion in the microphones, et cetera.
Let's do it. So let's play it. Yes, please. That'd be great.
And you tell me if this is coming out okay, and if it isn't, like, I don't know what we'll do. All right, but here it comes.
You're going to play us the sound of the name of God.
Of the divine name. Here we go.
And are these things supposed to happen to people? Should they meditate? Should they, prepare in any way to hear the sound?
I would say probably the best thing is just, if possible, to close their eyes and experience whatever they feel. Whatever they're supposed to experience, because profound things happen to people when they hear this. And we can talk about this in a minute, but rather than trying to say, okay, this is going to happen to you, I think the sound by itself is so powerful that just first listening to it will give you an experience that then we can talk about. How about that? It's about 2 minutes long. Would that be okay?
No, how long you said?
About 2 minutes.
Yeah, play it as long as you want. If you want to play it again, that's fine. We have time. Okay. I want to absorb it myself in this.
Okay, here we go. And okay. Here we go.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Africa.
So how does that feel, Alan?
Well, very peaceful, very relaxing. I think I could have listened to it longer and go into an altered state by doing that, you know. I was starting to feel my consciousness shifting somehow. What were you doing exactly? Can you describe it?
Okay, so that was basically the sound that I first made when I was told to sound these vowel sounds in a particular manner, going from my crown center down to my root center and then back up again. That's all it was. But could you hear the tetragrammaton in that sound?
Well, I couldn't hear the yud or the vav. I couldn't.
No, but could you hear the...
Well, I could hear that. Yeah, I could hear that. But I wouldn't know that was the tetragrammaton. I would not. I mean, it may be. I mean, is it the name of God because it encompasses all sounds? Could that be part of it?
That's certainly one of the things that I think is very valid about it, is that, you know, you can actually, for myself, I could clearly hear it. And once again, you know, through the phone connections or whatever connections we have, certain of the, sounds, if you like, dissipate. But when you actually hear this in a reasonable system, you can really hear that sacred name. And I love the fact that, yes, it encompasses all sounds, number one. But number two, what's so interesting is that I think as a, if you like, a universal sound, because while it may sound strikingly like the tetragrammaton, it may sound strikingly like the tetragrammaton being elongated, being sung, being intoned, being vocalized, it also is just a series of vowel sounds that are universal, because vowel sounds are found in every tradition. And also, it basically takes the energy from the top of the head down into the root chakra and back out. And what's interesting is that the tetragrammaton is described as a sound or as an energy that goes from spirit into matter and then back into spirit, which is exactly what this did. So the first part of the Divine Name book actually talks about my discovery of this, of my experience of it, but also my discovery, my validation that this idea that the vowel sounds make up this ancient sacred personal name of God is actually, if you research it a little bit, it's real and it's valid. And it also talks about the fact that a lot of people think that when Moses was on Mount Sinai, the name that he was told was I am that I am. We've all seen the Ten Commandments, right? And Charlton Heston, he's up there, and the burning bush says to him, I am that I am, which in Hebrew is Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. And this is, if you like, a wonderful depiction or description of the all-encompassing energy of the Holy of Holies. But on another level, in the next sentence, if you read people don't bother to get to the next sentence, which says, my name is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, probably pronounced as Yahweh, or as we've seen to be intoned as a long, elongated vowel sounds. This is my name. This is the name I am to be remembered from generation to generation. This is actually what Moses is told when he's on Mount Sinai.
That the name of God would be remembered from generation to generation. Is that
what
Moses
was to be remembered from generation to generation?
Who decided that it couldn't be said? Why did it become such a coveted sound? I mean,
well, that's a really good question. That's a really, really important question. Who decided? Okay, So it was first, if you like, given to Moses on Mount Sinai, and apparently the early Hebrews had this name. And then, for some reason, this name became prohibited. And if you like, it's been suggested that this is because of the third of the commandments, which is oftentimes, if you like, deciphered as being, thou shalt not take my name in vain, but really, it can be perceived as being, you shall not misuse my name or sound my name inappropriately, etc. So basically, we're not told not to sound the name or not to make the name, but just not to use it inappropriately. And first, Moses is told that this is a name that he is supposed to be remembered from generation to generation. And then we're told that we are not to misuse this name. Okay.
Finish your thought, and I'll tell you.
With that in mind, if you had, if there was a sound that could give you direct contact with the divine, and you were a priest, what would you do? Because that sound would make you no longer necessary. Because all of a sudden, the regular people could basically attune to the divine, and you wouldn't be needed. If I was a priest, I would probably try to suppress that. So I think it was a political move more than anything else.
Well, it was a political move, but you're saying, by saying this name, that was probably only kept for the high priest, people would gain access to what? What power can we now receive? Because if this is the name, we have it.
Suppose it allowed you to commune with the divine. Suppose it allowed you personal contact. In other words, suppose you didn't need a priest to make the phone call to God. Suppose you could do it yourself.
Well, now that we have it, are you saying that the times have changed, and of course they have, the vibration's at a different level, but by saying these vowels, how can we work with it in a way that is a direct contact to God that wasn't available to us before?
Well, that's a very good question. I have, as you know, this new book that just came out a couple of weeks ago called The Divine Name.
Yes, the sound that can change the world, yes.
Right, and it's broken up into three or four sections. The first section talks about my discovery of it and my, the understanding, what I've been sharing with you, that this name was suppressed for a number of political reasons, and talks about its use in the Old Testament, etc. And then the second part talks about the power of sacred sound, just all sorts of sacred sound, from the vibrations of different mantras throughout the planet. And then it talks about the power of prayer. And then the third part of the book is actually an instructional, and included with the book is a interactive instructional CD, so that, for example, if you're reading, go from E-E-E-E to A-H, E to A, it's very different than my saying, now, let's go from E because then all of a sudden you begin to understand how you can use these sounds to vibrate and make different, vibratory patterns within yourself. So yes. That the book, so we go through about an hour's worth of exercises in the instructional CD. So even if you were a brilliant mimic, I don't think if you heard this sound that you could do it, because it's really necessary, Alan, for you to be able to first start off by resonating the different energy centers in the different parts of your body with sound. And this is, and once again, I'm not talking about you needing to be able to carry a tune in a bucket or anything like that. You don't have to be a singer in order to make sound. We're not talking about entertainment. We're not talking about performance art. We're talking about actually just learning to use sound to basically shift your frequencies, a scientific term that's called entrainment. So we're actually talking about just learning to resonate different parts of your body and your energy centers with your own self-created sounds. And that unto itself is outrageous.
Well, if this is sacred sound, then this would be the most sacred sound in the world, or in existence, is what you're saying here.
Thank you. That is my belief, too. I have worked with mantras and sounds from almost every different tradition. And once I experienced, actually, because you heard the sound, but imagine what it was like. What it would be like if you would actually learn how to make this sound as I described it, and you felt the energy going from the top of your head down to the base of your spine and then back out again, and you literally, if you want, felt a dimensional portal opening while you're making that sound.
Well, could you teach me right now how to make that sound, and I can open a dimensional portal?
Certainly. Okay. I can't.
You can't.
I think that's probably why I spent about 2 years writing this very, very easy. It's only 40,000 words, which is not a whole lot of words. It could have been hundreds of thousands, but working with my wife, we chopped it down because I felt, Alan, that people learning to make this sound was so important at this very particular juncture in time and space in which this planet is going through such turmoil. So I really highly, and then, you know, I included the CD in the book, too, because I just want people to learn, because I think that if we're able to make this sound together, number one, on an individual level, we'll certainly experience great aspects of, well, anytime you start making sound, it's called toning, and it's got certain physiological benefits from reducing your heartbeat, your respiration, your brain waves, that's one thing. And then these different neurochemicals are released, including endorphins, which are the natural opiates, and melatonin, and many different natural positive beneficial effects occur, as well as resonating the chakras. And you put yourself in a really deep, you're able to open up and put yourself into a really deep state of, if you like, meditation. And just as a thought, you know, the concept of prayer, actually, prayer is a Western term that we use, but really what would be more appropriate is the idea of communing with the divine. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know really what you mean by communing. What do you mean?
Okay, if I use the word resonating, if I use the word, a lot of people think that prayer means to simply petition, please give me this, please give me this, please give me this. But I have a colleague by the name of Greg Braden who's written a wonderful book called The Isaiah Effect. Do you know of it?
I know Greg. I mean, I've met him a couple of times. I've heard him lecture. I know he's really at the forefront of putting together a lot of ideas about consciousness. But the Isaiah Effect is about what?
Effect is about the lost mode of prayer. And Greg is actually responsible for my bringing the divine name out to the public, because he wrote a book after the Isaiah Effect called The God Code, in which he was actually able to basically transduce the tetragrammaton that we've been talking about into a various number of different formulas and come out with this message that is, if you like, encoded within ourselves. And that message is God eternal within the body, which is a wonderful message encoded into our DNA. And after that happened, I said, Greg, I made this discovery 15 years ago, and I would like to make a recording for you of this sound that I discovered so that you could play it for your audiences while you're teaching this information about the God Code, and let them also experience the power and the majesty of this sound. And the effect was so powerful that I slowly began to do some teachings with Greg on the divine name. And then shortly after that, I was getting more and more inner guidance, Alan, inner messages, if you like. I was communing with something. I was communicating with something that was giving me these inner messages that now was the time to bring forth the divine name. But I'm jumping ahead. I want to talk a little bit about Greg's the Isaiah effect. And what he discovered in the Isaiah effect is that most people perceive of prayer as being a petitioning, asking, oh, please give me this. And when you're doing that, you're, if you like, asking from a state of wanting, of needing. And that the true power of prayer is to actually, if you like, be in a state of appreciation and gratitude, giving thanks for something as though it has already occurred.
Right, that's the key. That's the key to, I think Jesus said that in something, know that it is already so. I mean, other people say, I get that, and that's really a powerful way of praying. So that's the Isaiah effect.
That's the Isaiah effect. I'm going to take that a couple steps further, because what's really interesting is that, and I, the book, you know, the third portion of the book is basically talks about the how to use the divine name for prayer, and then the fourth section actually talks about how to use it as the sound that can change the world. But one of the things that I want to talk about for just a moment as we're talking about the power of prayer is this amazing phenomena that they have recently been able to scientifically validate. And that is that there's an everybody knows that there's an electromagnetic field that is being generated from your brain. But a lot of people don't know that there's also an electromagnetic field that is generated from the heart. And here's the amazing thing. When the heart is in a state of coherence with the brain, that is sort of vibrating or resonating at the same frequency, the electromagnetic field of the heart is 5,000 times greater than that of the brain. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Wait, when they're resonating together, the field of the heart, they have to resonate together for the field of the heart to emanate
right.
That?
They have to be in what is called coherence. Now guess how you get into coherence.
Yeah, how? I was going to ask that.
By being in a state of gratitude and appreciation.
Is it like an alpha wave? Oh, I know it's a little clinical, but is that like also an altered state of consciousness somehow?
Well, for sure. And I mean, I'd like to, I'll be glad to. For a moment, this is in the book, and this is something I share with people all the time, and particularly when we're working with any sort of sound, but particularly with the divine name, is first just begin to take some nice deep breaths in and out. And you know what I'm going to do right now, as long as we're going to do this, I'm going to put a little bit of music in the background just so I can lead you to a brief meditation so you can achieve some coherence. Would you like that?
Yeah, I'd love that. Let's go for it.
Okay, so this is from a recording that I did called... this is called Holy Harmony. And I just want to have it lightly in the background. And just begin breathing in and out. Slowly. And as you begin to breathe in and out slowly, visualize as though you're actually breathing in and out through your heart. That the breath is not only coming in through your nose or your mouth into your lungs, but it's actually going in and out through your heart. And now, while you're doing this, I want you to think of something that you feel appreciation for, that you feel gratitude for. It could be just a beautiful scene, lying on the beach or a mountain spring. Or it could be someone that you love. It could be a spouse or an offspring or a pet, anything. Just feel something that you feel gratitude for while you're breathing in and out through your heart. Okay, and that is all it takes.
So that gratitude, yes, resonates or aligns the heart and the mind together.
Right, someone recently said to me, compassion creates coherence. I love mm-hmm. that, because I think that is one of the really, really important things that we need to do on this planet, is to really get into a state of cooperation, compassion, in order for us to work together as a species. I think that's what we need to do in order to make a quantum leap in evolution.
What does that leap look like to you from your perspective?
Okay, this is going to sound pretty simple, but I just gave you a very, very powerful exercise that was pretty simple, wasn't it? What I think it simply is basically akin, if you like, to what they call the golden rule that is found in almost every tradition on the planet. And the Dalai Lama, I think, said it best. Be nice to each other. Be compassionate to each other. That's what it looks like. If you start being compassionate and cooperative instead of being competitive and greedy, I mean, most of what is going on this planet right now is the result of people being in competition with each other and greedy, like they cannot get enough, and they will not share with other people. And because of this, we've really created an extraordinary disharmonious state for ourselves and for the planet. Did you see the movie Avatar?
Yeah, I did see it, and I liked some of it, and I also thought, you know, resorting to war again was a little old. It was a little old, you know, and there has to be a better way of making a new type of story that doesn't involve war and violence and destruction. So I was a little disappointed in that part of the film. But it had a beautiful thing to say, of course, being in harmony with the planet. It was just a matter of getting there was old paradigm, you know. But
yeah, I agree, but I just wanted to bring up, do you remember the point, the time when the fellow, as the Avatar, basically hooks into the Tree of Souls, and he says to the Tree of Souls, we need your help. They have destroyed their mother. Meaning, you know, and I thought that was such a poignant thing, because humans right now are, if you like, on the brink of destroying our mother, the Earth Mother, through all sorts of different situations, which from my perspective are simply working with greed. And we don't have to go to that place. You're asking, what does that, you know, leap in evolution look like? It looks like people getting along with each other. You know, you talk about creating a new paradigm. What sort of paradigm would it be like if we were to be nice to each other, if we were not to compete with each other, if we were to cooperate with each other, Alan? What would that be like?
Well, that's the type of world I'm trying to create, you're trying to create. BBS Radio is trying to create I think. But I think that's also what the economic collapse, if you want to call it that, is trying to show people, that there has to be a better way of distributing the wealth and the abundance.
Right. So, isn't that an aspect of just greed beyond greed?
Yeah.
When you have it's not my purpose to talk about these things, because my purpose is to help wake people up so that they no longer will, if you like, be in a state of greed, be in a state of competition. And people can wake up. I saw this brilliant show on Now, which is a PBS show, and it was with Bill Moyers. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, I love Bill Moyers. He is one of the real shining lights in mainstream media. I mean, he is responsible for so much positive, uplifting material. But I didn't see the one you're talking about. What's happening on that one?
Well, this one, you know, it happened probably about 6 months ago or so, and it was about a guy who was a CEO of one of the major insurance companies. And he had been, you know, doing the typical thing that the insurance companies do, which is just try to make a whole lot of money by not paying for people's insurance. And then for some reason, this guy was visiting some family in, I don't know if it was Kentucky or one of those states, but he happened to pass by one of these free outdoor health fairs, and he literally saw thousands of people lined up in dire need of health. And he saw them, they were sprawled out just on sidewalks in the rain, and he was somehow able to put a face with all these nameless numbers that he'd had. And all of a sudden it hit him, and he basically became awakened to the degree that he quit his job as CEO of the insurance company and became sort of a whistleblower about what was going on. But as I was watching this, I said, by gosh, here's an example of somebody who has become awakened. And how did he become awakened? Because indeed he saw that we are really all unified as one person. And if that can happen to one person, it can happen to us all. And we have the ability, Alan, of actually shifting and changing, if you like, the consciousness or the sphere of the planet with our thoughts and our prayers. Now you got to ask me
and,
how.
And the sound is another form of unifying, especially this name of God that you've discovered is probably the sound of unification.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That's wonderful. That's wonderful indeed. Yes. And here's just a thought, okay? I believe that there's a reason that most of the prayers on this planet, whether you want to call them communicating with the divine or whatnot, most of the prayers are spoken out loud, and it's this simple. Sound amplifies and enhances the effect of prayers. So if you get a whole lot of people, okay, let me backtrack for a minute. I'm sure Greg and probably other people have talked about, for example, the work of the Global Consciousness Project. This is out of Princeton, New Jersey, and they do amazing stuff, and they have these random number generators, which are, people say, what's a random number generator? A random number generator is basically, it just generates random numbers. It's like a little computer. And they got them spread all over the planet, and what they have found is that when you have events of high compassion, events of great compassion, all of a sudden, the randomness of the numbers in these generators becomes less random, and they can actually chart it and graph it.
Well, it's not just compassion. They had less random numbers in those generators when the planes hit the World Trade Center. Maybe that's
an example of that too, because times of compassion are not necessarily great times where everybody's having a party. It's not necessarily the Super Bowl. It's not the same thing as events of great excitement. When the tsunami occurred, these also occurred. But, you know, Alan, I have been fortunate enough to help lead a lot of global sonic meditations that occur, and there are also obviously regular global meditations that also result from this, and they have found that, first of all, when there are meditations that occur within a city, powerful meditations, that for about 24 hours afterwards, most of the violent activity near that city ceases. And when they do it on a global level, they are able to actually chart it, and somehow something's going on. Now, you know, it's hard to say, well, you know, it's hard to do an actual A equals B with regard to this, but I can assure you that something's going on. And there's another organization called the Global Coherence Initiative. And this is one that is trying to, if you like, measure and see if there is a relationship between the electromagnetic field that we were talking about of the human body and the ionosphere of the planet, if they can interface and exchange with each other. And it seems that they can. So we, as an individual species, are not alone, and we are not powerless. We have a choice.
I mean, I think everything you're talking about is about a new understanding of physics that people like Lynn McTaggart and Rupert Sheldrake touched upon. Field dynamics is that we emanate a field of energy, and collectively we emanate a larger field, and, you know, we don't stop at the edge of our skins. We continue on into energy, into beyond the body. And I think physics, as they catch up with this, will understand this greater dynamics that you're referring to here. So it's exciting times. And I think sound has always been a demonstration of us emanating beyond the scope of our bodies, you know?
Totally. And just as an interesting thing, because you're mentioning Lynn, you know, and her book, The Field, which is wonderful, and Rupert Sheldrake, you know, I know them both, and they're just wonderful people, because, you know, it's such a gift that a lot of the folks who are doing this work are such visionaries. And, you know, if you're, whether or not you are a tried and true scientist, as soon as you begin to delve into the world of probabilities and quantum mechanics and string theory and all this and that, you're dealing in realms that are almost heresy by most of today's sciences, and yet it's probably going to be proven very, very soon that what we were just talking about is, in fact, real. Many, many years ago, I remember the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the guy who brought transcendental meditation to the east, to the west, you know, the Beatles studied with him for a while. And at one point, you know, he was teaching sort of a form of mild levitation. And I remember somebody asking him, I said, well, you know, Maharishi, when will the whole planet be able to levitate? And he said, when the whole planet, when the people on this planet understand that gravity is an illusion.
Whew. Right. It's like Einstein said, reality is an illusion, but a persistent illusion, you know.
Yes, this is true. This is true. And getting the ability to you know, understand that, okay, there's a wall over here, and this is really just composed mostly of space, and having the ability to pass through it, that's very different. But I think, here's just a thought, jumping ahead a little bit, that by working with things such as the divine name, that we're also going to be able to enhance what the Hindus would call siddhis, S-I-D-D-H-I-S, which are these extraordinary miraculous powers that the different yogis and sadhus and spiritual masters had. I believe that is also part of our quantum evolution.
Mm. But getting back to the divine name, I mean, yes, I totally agree. I'm just curious, did Moses actually then see a being, or did he go into, and this is all hypothetical, of course, but could he have gone into the same state that you went into and had that same divine connection where he realized the divine name? So in a sense, he wasn't talking to a being, a father figure, God. He was accessing an inner state where he's one with the creation, with the creative force.
I love that. I love that. And to me, that feels so right and so real because if you like, this creator being is, if it is I am that I am, if it is everything, that is, then it is all things. It's not the it's the father, mother, child, the tree, whatever. It's all that is. And indeed, by accessing, by communing with that aspect of higher self that ultimately is the divine. Yes, mm-hmm. I mean, so that was beautiful what you just said. I mean, from my perspective, feels very, very correct.
Well, no, just talking to you is giving me insights into what this biblical language could have suggested as far as empowering ourselves. I mean, we've given our notion of God out there, but I think, you know, these people who start these religions, Jesus, Buddha, are beings who connected with the source, and Moses as well. So the I am that I am, of course, is the name of everybody that exists. We don't have a name except to say our true name is I am that I am. So if we were to express that in sound, then perhaps we'd come up with what you came up with. But the other thing along those lines is maybe, and this is, again, just putting it out there, because language was evolving and Moses may have gotten into the state of communication, he realized he could manifest things with this connection to the divine source and went into the state and created this religion from the sound that came to him in that state. Something like that is coming to me. Does that make sense?
This is so interesting. And there are two things that I want to say, I want to first talk about that for a second, last thing else, because I've never perceived, even though it's interesting, because yes, I do think that the divine name may have first stemmed from Moses, but I don't see it now as being particularly restricted to the Abrahamic traditions. I see it as being universal. You're talking about language. Okay. You know the story. Let's get biblical for a second. You know the story of the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
And before the Tower of Babel, people were supposed to be able to communicate with each other and have just all sorts of traditions, and peoples were able to communicate with each other. But then they had the hubris, if you like, to try to build a stairway to heaven. And in order to stop that, all you'd have to do is begin to place some consonants. Place consonants in different parts of people's, in the vowels, and all of a sudden, one person is saying cat, and the other person is saying tack, and some persons, and they can no longer communicate. So there is a thought that vowels are the sounds that communicate, and consonants actually create the barriers. Now I got to jump for another second just because I feel great resonance with your understanding of this, and I just want to ask, did you get a copy of the Divine Name book?
Yeah, I have that right here. It's a beautiful little book. I actually think it should be a bigger book because you tend to not regard it as so valuable because it's, well, that's a publishing thing, but, you know, it's a very nice book.
Because what I was going to ask is, Alan, I would like to say that if you begin to actually work with some of the sounds, if you can read through the book, and I wrote it small so that it wouldn't be too intimidating for people, and I wanted them to go from the beginning to the end of the book, and it really won't take you that long.
I know. It's a very easy-to-read book, yes.
And if you work with the CD that's included, you'll be able to make the sound, and your life will change. And I come from a place where you can't lie. So this is truth. This is the word is emis. This is the truth. And so I would love to hear what happens with you because, you know, all of a sudden now people are beginning to read the book and experience this, and it's really, truly extraordinarily powerful for them.
Well, are you going to travel around the country and give some workshops about this?
I will be doing some, for sure, but my purpose was mostly to be able to talk on wonderful shows such as yours, and just tell people, you know, if they're interested, go to thedivinename.com. We've got a nice little link if you go to thedivinename.com, and you can, you know, read some excerpts from the book and this and that, because I like to believe that if I did my job successfully enough, that this book by itself will be a great primer, sort of a how-to, if you like, to actually experience a vibrational step-by-step activation of yourself using the divine name.
What kind of transformation happens to people when they start to work with this?
It's a wonderful question. What kind of transformation happens to people when they begin to open up to their essence and their source and their connection with the divine?
Well, yeah, I know. Everything happens, right? I mean, it's...
Right. So, you know, I'm not one of these people that say that, you know, I know that people love, you know, Alan, I have over 25 CDs. And people go, well, you know, which one of your CDs is good for X, Y, or Z? And I say, well, go to my website and listen to an excerpt from it and tell me what works for you. Don't let me tell you what works for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to empower people. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the high priest leading all the people. You know, that's not the purpose right now. We need all of us to be our own high priests. We need all of us to be have our own connection with the divine, working with the energy of love and light through sound, working with the energy of cooperation, working with the energy of communication, working with the energy of compassion. Alan, if we can do that and be nice to each other, we can do it ourselves.
But the one thing I do want to know, because I've worked with J.J. Hertog, you know his work?
Sure. Yes, I do indeed. The Keys of Enoch, yes.
Yeah, The Keys of Enoch is a brilliant work. And my theory about that book and him, because he works with a lot of sound and his sound recordings are beautiful, and he uses a lot of Hebrew sounding words, that somehow in 1973 he uttered that divine name through some kind of vowel combination and was transported with his body 3 days up to the high heavens where he met Enoch. Now, he didn't say this, but I sort of just guessed or hypothesized that that is probably how he had that manifestation, that incredible journey happened to him when he downloaded the keys. So I don't know if you uttered the same name that he did, or maybe that's not what happened, but look what happened to him, I think, and somehow you didn't get the same fireworks, or maybe you did, I don't know, but...
Well, let me suggest that I love the Keys of Enoch, okay? But I would like to suggest that the Keys of Enoch is not accessible for mainstream consciousness. And therefore, if you want to create change for a whole lot of people, you have to make it more accessible. So that's why I did the divine name. You know, I actually worked with my wife, who's a wonderful psychotherapist, and she helped me edit the book, and I would put stuff in. She'd go, take that out, because people won't understand it. Now, I've read the Keys of Enoch numerous times, and I'm a fairly bright person. I don't understand a whole lot of it. So for most people to look at it, it's sort of gobbledygook. So I wanted to just write something that they could really get with their heart. They could get with their heart, and they could really get as a powerful, powerful technology, a tool for transformation that could actually usher in a new era of human consciousness, uniting us in healing, peace, and oneness.
And I agree with that. The only thing, thank you for that, but the thing I think about the Keys of Enoch, it's not supposed to be read linearly. It is a multidimensional book that speaks to many different aspects of our psyche, and whatever piece we plug into is the part that opens for us. So it's not an ordinary book, and you have simplified it for the common person, because
I've taken something very, you know, please understand, it's one of my favorite books.
It's a very difficult book. I agree with you. It's like the Finnegan's Wake of spirituality.
Right, you know, it is. And it's a wonderful book. But I have just, you know, been guided. I've been guided that, okay, to keep it simple and effortless, so that for me, if people can shift and change, and it'll occur at this point in time and space in our evolution, if you want a global transformation to occur, it's got to be a really easy, effortless, a little bit of work. You know, it might take you to read this book 3 hours to read, and it might take you an hour to listen to the CD, and et cetera. And I'm not saying that in 4 hours you'll have mastered the sound, but you'll begin to have made shifts. And I, Alan, have been doing this now for 15 years, and the shifts continue to occur.
Do you think at some point you might, and I don't know, get a bigger, a greater name of God, like the next level of the fractal? I mean, or do you feel this is it? You've reached the peak of sound essence itself?
Well, as I said, I have worked in this field for over 30 years, and I'm fairly, I have a pretty good reputation, and, you know, I have a degree, actually, in researching the uses of sound and music for healing, and I'm the founder and director of the Sound Healers Association, and president of Spirit Music, and a Grammy nominee, and this and that, and this has been a sound that I continue to work with, and I'm always open for whatever. In the very, very beginning of the book, in terms of the Tetragrammaton, I simply say, okay, there are many, many different ways even of working with the sound of the Tetragrammaton. I would never denigrate somebody else. I say, well, I've found a way that works and it's different than yours. And I say, blessed be, that's great. Try this if you want. If you don't, that's okay, too. I want to share what I've got as a discovery that might help bring peace and evolution and harmony on this planet. And if it doesn't resonate with you, I honor that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it also reminds me, so you start at the head, right? And then you bring it down and then back up?
Yeah.
To the crown chakra?
Yeah, and that, you see, that's not what I, you know, the thing I had, that's what I was given as directions as I was waking from a dream. Make the vowel sounds that I'd been working with for 15 years, make them so that instead of starting at the root and going to the crown and then going back down to the root, I went from, you know, start at the head, went down, went up. And, you know, I knew enough about the vowel sounds to be able to create them and experience it like that, but it's not like I had a purpose. It's not like, you know, in other words, okay, we want you to make the Tetragrammaton and sound it and experience and bring the energy from your crown. It isn't what happened. It's what I experienced, and then I spent a whole lot of time trying to validate and figure out what was going on. Does that make sense?
I totally get it. I mean, as I'm looking at the book and looking at the vowels, it also seems like there's an in-breath and out-breath within the making of those sounds. Like,
can we listen to that very first recording that I played you, just to hear it again now that we've been talking about it?
Incidentally,
you'll hear in the background, I'm using a crystal bowl just to create, if you like, a tone. I could play this without, actually, you know what? I'm going to play this. I found a version without the crystal bowl on it. And,
okay,
you know, you can just listen to this for a moment, and you can just hear the voice, and once again, understand that after, And with the book now, once we add our intention, if you like, once we add the visualization, our feeling onto how the sound should be made, it empowers it. But just even listening to the sound, so here we'll give a little listen to it once again. Okay?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm ready. Thank you. That was nice. So yeah. Are you inhaling and exhaling?
Well, I'm taking a breath in between making the sound, but it's really almost impossible to make a sound if you're inhaling, really. So when you're making a sound, you always have to be sort of exhaling. When you're talking, for example, you're exhaling. At best you can go... You know, and there's actually a way of doing the tetragrammaton as an in-breath, out-breath, but this is all working with the vowel sounds as an out-breath.
Well, I only thought the E sound, the E-E-E sound, you can actually say that inhaling, like, you know, you can actually kind of, anyway, it seemed like there was possibly a sound being made while you're inhaling.
I'll have to try that E going in. That was great, Alan. You just sounded like a no Tibetan monk.
Yeah, right. I think we're old Tibetan monks. So by saying this, to sort of wrap it up in a way, of course, there's lots we can talk about as far as sound itself, but
this particular... Totally. Just to talk about sound. Just for talking about the divine name, but that's great, yeah.
And I will ask you some questions about sound, but this divine name, if people get this book called The Divine Name and do this, they'll start to align the frequencies of their heart, mind, and spirit, let's call it that.
Yes, they will, and I believe that this book is the culmination of my thus far 30 years worth of working with sound. It's the fifth book that I've done, and I think it's just extremely, extremely important. And I think it's extremely important for us on a personal level to really evolve into a higher consciousness and be able to commune with the divine, you know, by learning about the power of sound. Alan, literally it's one of, you know, the power of sound is one of the most extraordinary healing and transformational abilities that most of us have forgotten about. And all of a sudden
What do you mean by that? Can you talk a little bit more about that statement that you just made?
That we've forgotten about it?
Yeah, we've forgotten about how it is healing and transformative.
Can we do another show on that?
We'll do it another. Yeah, we can do a whole another show on the power of sound.
Because I have another book called The Seven Secrets of Sound Healing, and I'd love to talk to you about all those different secrets, the really just basic principles of sound healing. And I'd love to talk about it at some time. And once again, in The Divine Name, I have at least a whole chapter on the power of sound. And when I say we've forgotten about it, it's just the same sort of way as nowadays people are beginning to be aware of the chakras and the the etheric field and the subtle body and the fact that we can basically transmit healing energy through our hands, whether you call it Reiki or therapeutic touch or whatnot. Okay, this is about in the last 10, 20 years, we're beginning to realize the power, for example, in our hands to heal. Well, there's an extraordinary power in our voice that we can use to heal and transform. But that, my friend, is, I hope, another evening, because I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Yes, I mean, thank you. This divine name is such, it sounds like such an important discovery. It should be on the front page of every newspaper. It's very revolutionary, if it is what it is. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Right.
From
my perspective, and I thank you for that, and it is what it is, but at the same time, I like to go slow. That's just the way that I like to do it, so that, it's been out a couple of weeks, and doing some radio, and hopefully it'll grow, and those people who are resonant with it, who basically feel attuned to it, will basically pick it up. And, you know, here's the thing, and I'll just share this with you, and I know that you know this, but one of the things that my friend Greg Braden talks about is the fact that, you know, the question is, how many people is it necessary for the entire consciousness of the planet to be influenced and affected? And he did the math, and it's the square root of 1% of the population, which right now is only about 8,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think it's necessary that everyone begin to do this. Everything in its own good time. But thank you so much for your support of it. And I know that you're going to have even more support of it once you get through all the way through the book and start working with these sounds. And I know we're going to have some extraordinary conversations.
Well, thank you. Now, do you have a song or something you'd like to play on the going out on the show? Anything? Anything from your collection?
Sure. Let me just think of something that...
Something you have handy there. And I'll just tell people that I've been talking to Jonathan Goldman, the author of this new book, The Divine Name, The Sound That Can Change the World. We heard a little samples of that. And your website is healingsounds.com. And Jonathan Goldman's the author of many books on sound healing. He's a pioneer in sound healing. This book is published by Hay House. It's just out, and it's in all your local spiritual bookstores by now. And Jonathan's just going to leave us with one of his own sound compositions, if you can find one.
Yeah, I got one here, and this is from the Medicine Buddha, from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, because I work with mantras from all over, and this is called the Heart Sutra. And it is designed to open up, because we're talking about compassion. So it's designed to basically open the heart. And, once it stops and fades out, I'll be off the air, but I want to just thank you so much, Alan, for allowing me the opportunity to share with you, and I hope we have a chance to do it again very soon. And many blessings to you and all your readers, and let us go out now with the Heart Sutra.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. You can keep playing it. I'll just say goodbye, and email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.